Hello and welcome to the Alicia Power Hour, as we just 10 seconds previously decided we're going to call it.
Sure.
This is not a typical Daily Musings episode because, well, first of all, my episodes haven't been daily for quite a while. Second of all, it's an interview, so I'm not in my own home sitting on the floor. I'm in someone else's basement. So this is Dave Roman, who is a longtime friend, and he has a recording studio and a sound, like you do, like sound work for people and stuff like that. So hi, Dave.
Hello.
Thank you for, I was going to say, thanks for joining me as if I've put everything together, but no, I've totally inhabited Dave's space. He's put up all the lights. He's got the videos going. He's got the sound going.
This is Roman Empire Studios. That's where we are. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is going to be like basement. A significantly higher quality video than what I usually do as a result of it. So, yeah. So thanks for chatting with me. Just to give you guys a little bit of context, we recorded a podcast episode just previous to this. So you'll have to check it out on his podcast. It is the Creative Coliseum.
That's right.
Do you brand it under Roman Empire Studios?
Yeah, we kind of consider it an in-house production.
Yeah. So you can find that anywhere that you listen to podcasts. It was a lot of fun. So thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, it's great. I'm glad we're doing another podcast because I feel like I didn't get to talk enough with you.
Yeah, I know. I feel like some of my favorite podcasts, just a very quick diversion here, but are really long. Like, so for example, I really like listening to like Tim Ferriss is a classic one. They're like 2-hour podcasts because I love when people get nitty gritty and just like start. I feel like conversations get way more interesting past the first hour mark.
Totally.
Because you get all the stuff out of the way. Like all the kind of standard stuff. And then you start getting into like how someone really feels about something.
Yeah. No, 100%. I'm always like with my podcast, I'm always kind of on the fence about how long I should make it because part of me is like, oh, it needs to be digestible. But then I'm like, man, I just love talking for hours with people and nerding out.
Yep.
Maybe nobody will listen to that, but I guess I would like that more. So maybe I should just do it.
Yeah. We could have a really long episode where like by the end of it, we're having like a deep discussion on the Oculus device.
Right. We're just talking about the Oculus Quest. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So Dave, who are you?
Who am I? I am an audio engineer. As you can tell here in my studio, we're recording you. I guess I'm an artist.
I guess I'm an artist.
I don't know. Like, it's so funny because I always think of myself as an artist second and like a producer engineer first, which maybe I am because that's what makes me the most money. Mm-hmm. I'm a parent, a couple kids. I'm married. I'm an old fart from Weyburn. I don't know. I'm a lot of different things. But, you know, I feel like these days I'm mostly just a business owner, you know, doing content creation, working in the film industry, that kind of stuff. All audio related, all music. That seems to be where I mostly live and a bit of music too. So, yeah.
Yeah. So to give a little bit of backstory about Dave from my point of view as well. So I've known you for a really long time because it's like when you're in bands, when you're young, it's like you know people in other bands and like band friends. And you were always involved with music with Rob was like our link, right?
Yes. Rob links everyone.
Yeah. So Rob is the person who did a lot of the work on my album as well. So actually you and Rob both worked a lot on my album where Rob did a lot of the bass, a lot of the guitar, he produced it. He did a lot of heavy lifting. And then of course you mastered the album.
Yeah. I wanted to do more actually, because you had asked me initially to do more. And that was when I was going through my health stuff. Otherwise.
Yeah. The time constraint was real.
I think I would have totally done it now in the situation I'm in. So it's unfortunate, but yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, but Dave did produce one track on my album, which you'll get to hear in March when it actually gets released. But yeah, I've known you for like probably a couple decades, at least like known of you. And in fact, we've collaborated in random ways over the year. Like we recorded that one track. There was like one summer.
Mm-hmm.
When was that? That must have been like 2013.
I don't know. It was so long ago. It was when I first started this business. So yeah, 2013 was probably right.
Yeah. And I don't know how it came about, but it's sort of like, hey, do you want to record a song? Sure. Yeah.
I was at the time obsessed with female electropop. Like that was like it. Like I wanted, like Purity Ring was just coming out and they were super awesome. Lights, I was big into Lights. So I was big into all that. I still am. But I was like, geez, I need somebody who knows what they're doing to like do something like that with me. And I did actually have a musician join me for a while and she just never really got committed and didn't really, you know, put out artistically. And so I eventually just moved on from that. But yeah, you made us one song with me. And that
one
was like,
song. It was fun. It was like on my way out. I was just moving to Toronto. So it was right before I moved and tried like the big city life thing for a while.
Right.
And actually it's still up on your SoundCloud, isn't it? It's Sleep in the Ocean.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like that song was super popular. Like it was
super
popular. What I mean by that is like it was one of the ones that like had the most downloads from what my
from your,
I don't mean like super popular, but for me, I mean for modest little me, that was like I think that was the one that got a lot of attention and kept getting downloaded and talked about. So that was, yeah, that was, that made me excited because that was like my first foray into something electronic and poppy. Like it really was. Yeah,
because previously, like you should talk about, I'd love to hear more about Linger because that was your main project. It still is in some, or are you kind of done with it?
I got this giant album waiting to finish and I don't know when it's going to happen. I'd love to because I love the album. But yeah, no, I mean, I've done so many different projects. Obviously, I've done The Criminal Kid when you started it. I did Linger. Yeah,
that's the other. We have to bring that in because you started The Criminal Kid.
I did. That was my name.
I'm like continuing it, but it all started with you. Like the name.
Yeah, yeah.
The concept.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I was in Linger. I was in Criminal Kid, and yeah, Criminal Kid's concept was when I initially started it, the idea that it was going to be political and it was going to be like the criminal kid was this weird oxymoron. Like how can a child be a criminal? Mm-hmm. That was the whole idea. So, and we had this whole look that we were like factory workers. we went all bought the same cheap shirt and we all like just dirtied it and made it disgusting.
Those pictures still exist on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. I liked the motif. Like it was kind of cool. And we were going to be, at least in my mind, I wanted to be kind of post-punk and, you know, I was really influenced by Refused and At the Drive-In and stuff like that. And I wanted to do things somewhat like that. I never really got to that side of music, mainly because you had a lot of different cooks and everybody brings in their own influence and it changes it. But so I kind of, I pictured it like that. It was just going to be scrappy and gritty and heavy.
Yeah. I kind of changed that a little bit, didn't I?
But we started that transition, like even before you got there, right? Like I think there was some talk. Well, for me, I knew I was going to have a kid and things were getting tough. Like I was getting tired and I was like, well, you know, I can't really carry the load of the front person anymore. I don't really want to either. And so that's why we brought you on board. And the idea was to shift styles when we picked you into something a little different, right? And so some of the initial songs we wrote together were starting to go that direction already. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. So it was sort of like I was headed in the door into The Criminal Kid at the same time that you were kind of going out the door.
Yeah, exactly.
So we kind of like crossed over a little bit, like we recorded a track together.
We did, yeah. And we wrote some stuff.
Yeah.
It was not my plan to do that. Initially, I thought I was going to stick around. And then it just became too much. Yeah, I just didn't have the time, unfortunately.
Yeah, so yeah. So we've been involved in a lot of musical projects over the years. So Linger was your big one that I recall.
Yeah, I've done it forever. Yeah. Linger started in, I don't even remember. It was in the 90s. It was a long time ago with myself and Rob Hillstead and Nathan Binns from Weyburn, Saskatchewan.
Well, in fairness, like when you're growing up in a small town, this is one of the benefits, I think, of actually, because I mean, people trash talk Saskatchewan. And I mean us in particular, like people I know, it's not like random people are trash talking Saskatchewan as much as I think we who live here trash talk it. But when it gets so cold and there's like nothing to do when you live I feel like it's a great push for creativity. Like what if you guys were all born and raised in Toronto, would you have...
Like, yeah, that's hard to say, right? I mean, we were such misfits and such outcasts in Weyburn, of all places. Like, for those who need some context, like, Weyburn is a highly conservative small town. You've lived there, you know now. I mean, I grew up there when there was very few brown people, like myself. I was very, very much an outcast there. Very much... I actually amplified that on purpose. I became the goth kid and all that stuff. I really wanted to find myself, and actually that helped a lot. But anyways, so yeah, like what else do you do? Like what, I don't know. Like I really looked up to Rage Against the Machine and Tool and Marilyn Manson and Nine Inch Nails and all this stuff at the time. I mean, I know we don't talk about Manson anymore, but, yeah, I was a big fan of that whole genre and, I was really influenced by that. So I don't know, like I always kind of thought I was going to be in a band. I remember I had these friends, they never did anything musically, but we always talked about this joke band we had. And I was like serious, like they were like, oh, we're going to make this band. We're going to make this band. And I don't know if they would remember this if I even talked to them, but it really stuck with me. I was like, yeah, we're going to make a band. We're going to do this.
Were joking, but there was like, were like, oh no, this is for real.
Yeah, they were having a good time. Yeah. And I was kind of like, how do we do this? How do we do this? And then I started doing it. I don't know. Rob and I just started picking up guitars and figuring out how to play them and writing depressing music and
best kind of music to write.
Right? We actually, you know, the funny thing is our first song we really wrote together, like entirely wrote together, was this anti-smoking song for high school.
How old were you? Like 14, like 15?
We were in high school in like a media studies class, and the assignment was enter this anti-smoking contest or something. I can't remember, something like that. So I feel like we were the only song entry in this whole thing, and they just gave us the money. It was like
nice.
And it was like, it was a cheesy song. I still remember it. Like, it's still in my head. I can, yeah, I'm not gonna sing it. Okay. It was called Corporate Nick Fit, which was hilarious.
Corporate.
Yeah, and it was talking about like corporations like exploiting you and ruining your health with their cigarettes and stuff like that.
Oh, so you like made it edgy, like yeah, in the vein edgy. Of the artist that you were into at the time.
Yeah, it was a little punk.
That's pretty cool. It's
yeah.
like a pretty cool way to get started with music.
Well, you know, our very first song was award winning. That was always our joke. Rob and I would always call ourselves award winning songwriters after that. We're like, oh yeah, we're award winning songwriters.
Really, it's literally true.
We won this Sask anti-smoking award thing. I don't know. I don't even remember what the contest was officially, but
yeah.
Anyways.
That's like a pretty big, I want to take it to the present a little bit now, mm-hmm. because one of the ways in which we've reconnected recently is because we both have bands that are releasing mm-hmm. albums right away and kind of on a very similar trajectory. So first of all, your band is Femme Fragile and you have one single and video out from the new album, right?
Technically we've released 4 singles from the album already.
Oh, have you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
However, we only have 2 of them online right now because the first 2, the whole plan was to release the full album before the expiry of 1 year that you pay for on TuneCore. Oh. And that never happened. So
they expire.
So I was like, you know what? I don't want to renew them knowing I'm going to re-release them on the full album.
Oh, that makes sense.
2 of them have lapsed, but you can still find the music video for Pretty and Dying, for instance, on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You just can't find it on streaming platforms. But yeah, we've released 4 singles already, which is, I mean, I don't know how long it's been. It's been way too long.
Yeah. So when did you record your album?
You know, I'm starting to forget the timelines because it's been years now, but I just know we've been slowly recording it for years, writing a song, recording. Like the way I work is probably different than some people because I'm not really a jammer anymore. Like I used to jam and come up
Same.
With songs, right? I sit at my computer and I just like come up with riffs and I record them. I come up with a beat. I record it. Like I do a lot of that stuff. And for this particular project, like I'm the musician. Like I'm doing all the music. Mm-hmm. That part's me. Shalyn does the vocals and writes the lyrics. And she actually started doing a lot more initial songwriting now too, which is cool. Yeah. So, I mean, I sit at a computer, I come up with ideas and then we did this totally digitally. I mean, I'd be mm-hmm. sending ideas to Shalyn. She would record something over top of it with her phone. I'd bring it back in. I'd edit it, you know, like it was just kind of back and forth like that. And then when we felt like we had enough for a demo, she'd come in and do the demo. And to be honest, quite often that would just become the final recording because I'm set up to be a studio. So
you're making like high quality demos.
Exactly.
It's not like it's
right?
some garage demo.
There's instant feedback to what you've made, right? You create it and then you can listen to it. And then you can kind of make a judgment based on that. Like it's not like I'm listening to some like little iPhone recording trying to figure out if this is a good song we should record. Like I get to kind of hear what it sounds
point.
Like. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, maybe this one's not so good. Maybe this one's good. So yeah, we've done that for years. And to be honest, this album was finished writing easily a year ago, maybe more. And it's now finished all the mixing and the marketing and the music videos is all there already. And the album's going to come out for real.
So it took you like basically a year from finishing to do like all the detail work of the recordings, like when all the tracks were kind of done and then you had to nitpick them for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I mixed in chunks. It wasn't just a year. Like it would be like, oh, I'm on a roll right now for a month and I'd be mixing and then I'd stop and then I'd be on a roll again for another month. Like, you know, like it wasn't consistent. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a few of them I've reapproached a couple times because
yeah, you said, when we were talking on your podcast mm-hmm. that one of them you were noodling with like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. The new single that's coming out. I
which is very good, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I believed in the song so much that I was like, I'm not going to allow it to have anything subpar. And when we first recorded the vocals, it was like when COVID was still, we had no idea what was going on with COVID. So Shalyn and I decided we still wanted to finish the album. So we ran a snake from this basement all the way to my garage and she recorded it in my garage while I sat in here. And
just to be like COVID protocol.
Yeah, for real.
Wow.
And then we met outside in the middle, like, cause it was warm out and we just hung out outside in the middle, talked and then went back to our things and we could talk through the mics too. So but yeah, we recorded it in a garage. I'd makeshifted the vocal booth. So I didn't love it. I thought it was okay, the initial recording for the vocals, but I didn't love it. So I just decided, hey, I got better tools now. I've got my professional vocal booth.
It wouldn't take that long.
No. And we knew the song really well. I was like dreading having to remix the vocals cause there's a lot, but But we did it and I remixed it quick and I was like, no, let's give this single the best possible chance that it can have, because I feel like this is the single that I enjoy the most, that you know, is the catchiest, that is most accessible. And it's not just about, you know, well, we need to have people listening to it. But I really do believe in this single. I feel like it's a really good single. So
what date are you releasing it on?
Ooh, I think it's the 25th of February, I believe.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So within a month or so. It's called Bitter, and there's a music video that goes along with it as well. So keep your eye out. Like, follow Femme Fragile on Spotify or wherever you catch your music. Maybe iTunes would be a more appropriate choice for the for what's happening in the moment regarding Spotify. So what was the track that you released previous? So Bitter is the one coming up. Yeah. Really excited. He actually just shared the video with me, so I'm very excited for the rest of you to see it. It was really fun. And it's a really, really, like, it's actually, like, for being a song called Bitter, it actually has, like, kind of a positive feel. Like, a lot of it's major key. It's got, like, a nice, but what was the track prior to this that people could check out, the video that you did recently?
Yeah, I just made a little homemade video with called Counterfeit with the cameras I'm using right now, actually, one of them. And my philosophy with that one was just, I just want to make, like, a really quick video with a DSLR. Well, I guess I have a mirrorless, with a mirrorless camera that I have, that's not like super high budget, that's just simple stuff. And just to have kind of something, because the one that's coming out, Bitter, is actually funded and everything, right? It has a grant and it's a little more high budget. And we hired Taryn Schnell from Picturesque Media to do it. So I did a quick little video. I just felt like there was a gap in our content and we needed to keep going and keep doing things. So I just did that. But yeah, Counterfeit's the third single off, no, fourth single. Holy crap. Yeah, that's the fourth single off the album.
Yeah, so Bitter will be the fifth.
Yeah, like we've had Save Yourself was the first one, then Pretty and Dying, then Feel Me, and then Counterfeit. And then Bitter is the last single off the album. We're not going to release another like bona fide single off the album.
Then the whole album is just coming out after that.
Exactly. It's a 10-track album, so we didn't want to like give it all away immediately, but definitely wanted to milk it a bit. I mean, you work so hard on an album, you want to get, you know, some benefit out of it. So we spread out singles.
Well, one cool thing about Counterfeit that I appreciate, and I think this is a really cool thing for artists in general, is because of all the social media content that people create, like TikTok and stuff like that, we sort of have like, it feels very modern actually for something to be like using handheld cameras and a little lower quality. It feels fresh in a way that I think sometimes highly produced videos don't have the same feeling. It feels very of the moment.
Right.
So I thought that stylistically, it kind of captured that. It felt like it had that kind of modern style to it.
Yeah. You know, that's funny. Like, I don't know that I made it with the intention of capturing the modern vibe of video making, but I did think like I wanted it to be gritty and handheld, and like we're just downtown shooting. Like, I wanted to feel like that's exactly what we were doing. I mean, I even got kicked out of one place at one point because I was like pointing a camera at, apparently has security cameras of one of the banks.
Oh,
I was like, no, I'm not filming the camera. I'm filming the sky. Like, I like the skyline. And this guy's like, I don't know. But anyway, so yeah, we want it to be very guerrilla style and handheld, and like the content of the video is like, it's just glitchy and gross. Like, that was the whole idea. Like, it's, we based it off of, you know, for people who live in Regina, Victoria Park, where all the, we called them the Vic Park kids hang out. Like, we wanted it to feel like we were just a bunch of Vic Park kids downtown. And we even like went and randomly picked some people up, like to be in the video at some point. Like, they're just sitting there.
That's extremely extroverted of you guys. Yeah. Very impressed.
Yeah. We went all out that with that kind of motif. And so I think the camera and the just the surroundings, like the mise-en-scene and everything, really fits that just trashy, well, we called it like, what do we call it, like gothy trash or something, I don't know. We had like an aesthetic we wanted to go for, and it basically represents us. Like, we're kind of frumpy people with,
well, and it's, you know, it creates a really interesting creative contrast to the new videos that's coming out, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, like you said, there was a budget for it. It's really polished. You brought in an actress to perform it. It's all indoors. It's got a very like contained storyline, as opposed to Counterfeit, which feels like you said, just kind of like rough around the edges deliberately. Shaylin gets a tattoo, like for realsies.
For real.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty cool part of the video. So I like that they're very different aspects of your guys's music.
Yeah. And I think that, like, I mean, that's always a challenge, I think, as an artist. You might relate to this. Like, I don't want to be totally in a box all the time, but at the same time, I do think sometimes we might go too far, like one direction. Like, one song will sound like Nine Inch Nails or something, and then the next song is going to sound like Lord and something else, like, I don't know, and Blink 182 or something. Like, you know, like, it just seems like it's good to blend those things. I got to blend all our influences, but I feel like there's sometimes we get on the edge with that of like how much to blend.
And, losing coherency, you mean?
Yes,
like between
exactly.
different styles?
So really the thing that ties all the music together for us is the guitar. I mean, the guitar and the percussion, I should say, because the whole philosophy of the album is, you know, there's kind of trap inspired beats, even though they're not 100% trap. Counterfeit totally is trap. Mm-hmm. That's like drill. Like it's the kicks are drilling all the time. Right. And then there's always kind of punky riffs. The guitar, like I won't lie. I was super influenced by Lil Peep. Mm-hmm. And that kind of genre. So a lot of the guitar work I do is like, hey, remember those riffs I used to write in the 90s and early 2000s that were not cool anymore? Well, now they're cool again. So I brought a lot of that stuff back. Yep. So that ties it together. So yeah, Bitter has a guitar line you'd probably think like Blink-182 would play or something, right? Like it's
right, but the way that it's forgive my lack of like technical mm-hmm. language, but the way that it's been mixed and edited, it feels like it's got a very fresh editing style. Mm-hmm.
I mean one of the big things I like in modern music is sparseness. Mm-hmm. And beat and thumping bass. I just love big thick bass. And then you have all this space over top of it for like there's a snap in the song. There's lots of, there's a big reverb kind of, tail. So I just like that. And modern music is all about, you know,
space.
Minimalism. Yeah. Yeah. Let's put a drum kit and a pad and some vocals over top of it. And let's just do that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, very true. Yeah, I think the to talk about the coherency thing a little bit, that was something because my album, Dear Disaster, is also like a little all over the place in terms of I'm proud of the fact that I think anyway, one song doesn't sound exactly like the other.
Right.
So when you listen to the album, at least I think, it doesn't just all bleed together as one kind of long piece of music. And a lot of artists sound like that, and it's really cool. So one for example, like I love Kurt Vile. Love him. I could listen to his music all day, every day. But it's like one track really blends into the next track.
Right.
Which is cool because sometimes you just want music to give you a vibe.
Sure.
Sometimes you want each music to be like its own unit as like a piece in the story and be distinct.
Yeah. I always try to live in that area somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's really what I struggle with. And you just know my influences are Nine Inch Nails. Well, if you know how many different like styles Trent Reznor has incorporated over the years, you know, and even within a single album, like
yes.
You look at The Fragile and every song is quite different. You know, some's like one's like a beautiful piano line with a beat and like ambiences. And the next one's like metal, you know, and like the next one's industrial. Like it just, it goes yeah. all over the place, but yet there is cohesion. So
yeah.
I've always lived there and I can't seem to get out of that. I think that's just the kind of music I enjoy. I enjoy some eclectic aspects. I think, if I have an artist who's just kind of producing the same kind of sound over and over again, then I get bored. And maybe that's the engineer in me, you mm-hmm. know, like I love the soundscape. I almost hear that first before anything else. I like the melody of the lyrics, but it's actually, I get bugged because I can't remember. Recently, Shalyn and I were having some discussion and like, I know her lyrics, obviously. I mean, but then sometimes I don't really like pay attention to them. I pay attention to what she's doing. I'm like, I like the way you sang that. I like the way you felt that. And like, I'll forget like, oh, you said that in a song, you know, kind of thing. Right. Because the words aren't as important to me as the soundscape, which is just who I am. I've just come to appreciate that.
Yeah. And I think about it in a totally different way. So when you're talking about like guitar and like the beat kind of being the backbone of your album, I think the vocal style is the thing that unites the tracks on my album and the way it's done. I think like, cause there's faster, there's like, you know, Shiver in the Sun is really like high energy rock kind of thing. But then you have the music that you worked on, Natural Feelings, which is like pretty dark. And how would you describe that one? I don't even know. Like,
yeah, I mean that one, I obviously brought my Reznor influence in
yeah.
there. Like it's got the four on the floor, doom dancey thingy. I don't know. That one's your most hard rock sounding. Maybe,
yeah. But yeah. It's got the moment.
Yeah.
It's got the most like dynamic range. There's like a love song. There's mm-hmm. like, there's a couple like I'm at the bottom of the barrel kind of like despair of life kind of songs. So, but the one thing is, I think there is the way that I write vocals, some kind of unity from song to song. So even if the music itself changes, because some of the songs were like very acoustic, for the most part we used organic instruments and like we did bring in synth a little bit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like even if the way that we built the song, the amount of layers and stuff, even if that was really different from one song to the next, the vocals were kind of keeping it connected.
Right. But. Yeah. You know, that's interesting you say that, because I'm thinking like that was something intentionally we did too, is we decided to make vocals weird sometimes. Like we decided to like, I listened to, I mean, Triple X Tentacion, however you say his name. I mean, crazy controversial figure, but musically, I mean, on his album, there would be like singing and then there'd be rap and then there'd be screamo and then there'd be, and so we wanted a little bit of that in our album. So you haven't heard the album yet, but the album there's screaming on it at times.
Yeah.
like there's outright like emo screams kind of thing.
Awesome.
But there's like, but then there's a lot of like soft ASMR type stuff.
I do a lot of that on Dear Disaster as well. Yeah.
But then there's like times where she's kind of like counterfeit is a little bit more like belting and it's almost hip hop at times.
Yeah. It's got attitude.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, I think I wanted to do that. Although I don't know, again, like I always feel like it skirts the edge for me. Like your philosophy is probably good in that it's easy to identify who you are as an artist then, you know, like you're the voice, you're the singer. And so,
but I think you can still have a lot of variety within that.
Cause sure.
I would never want to like, I mean, not trying to like name names Nickelback or anything like that, but the way that he sings, it's like, every note is the same volume and the same, like, it's just all in your face. There's no subtlety. It's like one dynamic quality, one range. And I think that's like one thing. I mean, it's obviously extremely recognizable. You know, it's Nickelback within 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, I think that you can still have like a recognizable, coherent sound and still have a lot of variety. Like maybe you scream, maybe you like sing really softly, but it's still... I don't know. I feel like Shaylin's voice is pretty distinct and like it's easy to know.
Definitely. I think for the most part, she sings in kind of a softer voice on the album. Like, I think that's like her main thing. And yeah, you're right. Like you can just recognize it. Like she's got this, I found a hard time describing it, but I'm big into, like I say, into female synth pop. That's been, Churches is a big project I was into for a while. And at times she sounds like that. Sometimes she sounds more like gritty, like a yelly kind of, I don't know how to describe it, like maybe Kitty or something. I don't know.
I could see that. That's actually like Kitty. And I don't know what the lead female singer of Churches is.
Lauren. Lauren, I can't remember her last name, but yeah.
But her voice is very like sweet.
Yes. And yes, that's it.
Yeah. And I feel like Shaylin has that in
her. She does that. Yeah. She'll mostly stay in that and then once in a while like burst out into other things. And I mean like Shaylin, I think, if I'm not mistaken, used to play in a pop punk band and then she played in Grimm, which was a little more like rock. Like, so she has that vibe totally. Right. But I don't know, you know, like, it's funny though. I mean, we have some intentionality in our project, but at the same time, I feel like we have just let it come to us a bit. Like when I've sent a song over her beats, like I had like a list of them and she just picked the ones that resonated with her and just wrote whatever to them. And I never really like told her, hey, you got to do this to that. Like I just kind of let her do it and just see what happens. And yeah. So, I mean, her vocal stylings were all, while they're kind of intentional in the production phase of things, I do feel like they just kind of naturally happened.
Yeah. They were like very much her own.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I never wanted to create a project with a collaborator that has no input in it. Like
that'd be super boring.
Right.
And also very like control freaky.
Yeah. Right. And I mean like Shaylin isn't, you know, she doesn't play an instrument per se or anything like that. So she can't contribute it that way. But I mean like Bitter was totally her spark. I mean, she sang some vocals for me on an iPhone and sent them to me. And I just started building around it.
Yeah.
I just put it in my program and I like put it in a metronome and then I started building stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that like like trying to, hey, you should do this, you should do that, kind of like micromanaging. It's like everyone has their own expertise. And that was something that I tried to do with recording Dear Disaster as well, because I wrote everything on that album. So I wrote the, like all the piano, all the vocals, the lyrics, like the bones of the album was written by me, but then other people came in and added, you know, drums, added guitar, added a bass, added synth. And I didn't want to be too like, I kind of just wanted like people to let their genius come through in whatever they came up with. And I wanted to have as little input as possible. The only input was, does this feel like it fits?
Right.
Because sometimes the ideas don't fit. It creates a different vibe than what you imagine.
Definitely somebody has to be the producer, director type person at some point, right? And But yeah, I feel like, well, and you had Chris Demas on your album. So, yeah. So I mean, you had like probably the best, one of the best drummers in Regina. Maybe
although
best.
He didn't do any of the drumming.
He didn't, hey?
No,
Mike. Oh, he did guitar, hey?
Yeah,
okay.
Mike did all the drumming, but Chris did do a couple like percussive things. For example, we have this track, Dear Disaster, which we spent a long time messing around with that one, trying to get the right sound. But basically, what's that, I don't know what these percussion instruments are called, but they're like really tall, skinny drums. And you stand up and like,
I don't know, they
go
have
crazy on them.
I'm not great at identifying my drums. They probably sound more like not bongos, but like,
it's like you sticks on them. Right. It was basically like it was okay. Really fast drum work,
like,
but it added
stuff.
Like, yeah, yeah. So he added a lot of like percussion. He did like shakers and stuff. Like, obviously, it doesn't take a whole lot of skill to do shakers, but he did add those little touches and he did do some guitar as well.
Interesting. Yeah. I think I remember seeing the Instagram stories where he was like sitting there like jamming on the guitar. Yeah. That's so funny. Like you have the like one of
an
the best
amazing drummer. I know. Studio. Like, isn't he an award-winning drummer?
Yeah,
right?
And
like,
then you put him on guitar. Yeah. That's awesome.
But going back to the consistency or coherency thing, it made sense to not because if Mike did 9 of the songs and then Chris did 1, it might not fit.
Right.
So I guess that was ultimately like the creative decision, even though like technically he probably would have been able to come up with something really cool.
Yeah. It does get noticeable.
Yeah.
That happened to Linger. Like we had Justin Robson drum, I think on 3 of the tracks on our album. And then Scott Tipple came in to finish the album. Mm-hmm. And they're both great drummers in their own right, but different styles. Mm-hmm. Right. And for me, it's noticeable. I mean, even the engineering is noticeable because those three were recorded at this like really fancy high end studio. And then the rest were recorded at home on their own. And then some were mixed at that same studio. Some were mixed by another person. So yeah. Yeah. Note to people doing releases. You're gonna do a full album. You can put out wherever you want. Sure. But if there's consistency in the recording process and the people involved, it does help.
Well, yeah. Is this something I'd love to ask you about branding a little bit? Because if we're talking about consistency, this is something I hate marketing. And I hate thinking about this stuff because there's something about it that feels very artificial. I'm like, I just want to like wear whatever I wear and like have pictures look like whatever. And just don't control me, man, by trying to make me have a certain visual appeal or something. But have you guys thought about the visual branding of your album? Like how, yes. Like the photos you release and stuff like that?
100%. Yeah. Memes. I hate to say it, but like, we're kind of like, I like the goth depressing memes, like kind of like the absurdist nature of talking about like depression and anxiety openly on the internet. Like I kind of like, yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen any of those kind of memes where they're it's jokey stuff. Because we both have mental health problems. Both,
but it's
Chalita
like jokey
and
dark at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's dark humor, but it does represent us because in some ways we have to laugh at ourselves because it's a real struggle to get through our lives some days, right? So, yeah, that was always the brand is like, well, you know, like that's who we are. It's who we are anyway. But we want to be kind of jokey and gothy. Like almost like, oh my God, we're so sad. Like on purpose, like so dark, you know, like that kind of thing. So that's always been our vibe. And then very personable. Like I don't feel like we do anything that's overly grandiose on our social media. Mm-hmm. Even like, you know, part of our, like we did this thing for our album where we have one track where we actually had like people contribute to it. And the idea was that we wanted to just connect with random people who kind of relate to some of the mental health issues we have. And we just got them to record themselves saying some things that people have said to them.
Cool.
In like almost like people giving them advice that was misplaced. And maybe it won't be as well intentioned, but you know, and we use that. And there's actually the scene in the album where Shalyn's, you know, sitting there and she basically, there's an intervention and all these people are around her telling her these things. And it's called Distortions. It's on the album. It's just like a little interlude thing. But yeah, we did that so that we could connect with the audience and we thought it'd be really cool to have other people's voices on there.
That's fun.
Right. It was fun. Yeah. And that part of our brand is building that community with other people too. Like we're very open about the struggles we've had. And this album really represents that. I mean, the album's called Things Are Not Okay, which is a meme phrase to begin with. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty impactful right now because I feel like everybody feels that way. Mm-hmm. You know, things just aren't that great right now. And this album is a reflection of that for both of us. Like we've gone through some crazy struggles over the last few years and all the music and the lyrics and everything is about all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, well, I got an album coming out called Dear Disaster. So I feel
right,
it's like a different angle of the same kind of vibe. Although I don't go in the goth direction the way that you go.
No. I know you're the interviewer here, but what's your vibe then? What's your vibe on your album?
Well, this is where I struggle a little bit. I mean, I think the vibe is just the photos that we happened to take back when we were recording the album. We found like a field of brown-eyed Susans, and we just took some like kind of, I don't know, artsy looking pictures in those. So like my branding vibe is basically just that right now.
Well, yeah, I know Criminal Kid's like first album too, though. There was this kind of nature clashing with things,
and that's like I want, and thank you for bringing that up, because I wanted there to be a connection, because the first album was These Blue Walls Are Faking Freedom, so it's kind of like you know, the album cover is like a guy sitting inside looking at a like a blue wall, basically. The artificiality of it is what I wanted to go for, and that's similar to this album. I really like the art that my friend Logan is doing, where it's like a statue that's exploding, essentially, in like kind of a cosmic way. So I like the juxtaposition of that with a very organic looking picture with flowers, because it symbolizes to me two parts of a journey to overcoming really hard things. I don't know. I don't want to like usurp the discussion on that, but branding is a really challenging thing. About challenging things, I was curious about one thing. So since you're going through the process of marketing an album, what is the hardest part about releasing an album for you? Are you finding?
Yeah, I think the most challenging thing with the album for me is always the artwork. I like trying to brand and trying to release. Like I'm doing it all myself because I'm so cheap and I don't want to pay anybody. And we've already paid so much for so many things.
It's incredibly expensive.
Right. Yeah. So I get lazy with that and I don't like it. Like I'm never super happy with the stuff I do for the covers and stuff like that. And now we're going to release the full length album, and Shalyn's coming here Tuesday to do a photo shoot. And we do have an idea for it. I'm hoping it's going to go really well.
Oh, so you guys are like going to make the art?
Yes.
For the album cover. Yes. Oh, so it's not finalized yet.
No. It was. And then I just didn't like it. Okay. Initially it was just going to be our logo and like splatters and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The more I thought about it, like it really doesn't represent what's going on here. Like we've become a lot more bright and punky. And so I want it to represent that a little bit. Like with Counterfeit, it was really colorful. As much as it was dark, there was like bright green and like all these other things. And it was just, I think that brand of like, we're still kind of poppy. We're still kind of punky pop, you know? And so yeah, the album's cover is going to have that kind of vibe too. And again, still meme-ish. Like we still want to reference memes. And it's not just, memes get exposure. It's like, that's just who we are. Like I literally go on the internet for memes. Like I can't think of the other thing I do more than look at memes on the internet.
You should start sending me your memes, because I have on my phone, I don't know if this ages me, but I save them in a folder, like my favorite memes. I'll just like download them. And then I have like rainy day folder of memes.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
I have a backlog that I can post. Like I post to the meme swap from here in Regina, like the 306 meme swap.
There's a Regina memes one.
I should probably add you. Yeah, you would probably enjoy it. And yes. It's like a big group of us, and I have like a big backlog of memes ready to post.
Oh, wonderful. Like hook me up with the meme group.
And it's a pretty good meme group. Like it's not the memes
like Facebook memes.
It's not like Pepe Le Frog memes and you know, like weird things like that. Like most of it's pretty good.
Good.
But yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, branding for me is all about just kind of, it's almost like poking fun at ourselves as much as it is being artistic. Like because I've always been this like over the top goth kid and stuff like that. And, you know, inside I'm always that, you know, I'm still that, you know, in some ways.
Right? So it's interesting that the, like the album cover is the, like one of the most challenging parts for you. Cause I'm thinking like, oh, I just outsource that. Like I just have a friend who's really good. So I don't even have to worry about
it. I should do that.
But I just think like, I look at all the things that you do. It's like, you do all the recording and the editing and the mixing and the mastering and all these things that are very complex as far as I'm concerned. And those things to you are like not the difficult things.
Yeah. Their work. I think I know their work. What's difficult about it is not even so much the process of doing it. It's the fact that I'm the artist and the producer. That part's hard because I can tinker forever. I just remixed the lead single 2 weeks ago and it's been like mixed forever. That can be a challenge because you can't separate yourself. You're not looking at it. I'm not looking at it objectively. I'm looking at it. Well, I am, but I just get too lost in it. I'm too close to it, I guess.
That makes sense. Cause if you were to, like, if you were paying someone to like edit it or produce it or whatever, it's like, there is an endpoint cause you're paying them.
Yeah.
But you're yourself.
And they put their twist on it too, right? Like, I mean, I'm doing my own stuff and I'm mixing my own stuff. So it's, nobody's putting a twist on it. Like, it's all up to me, you know? And
that's true. And
sometimes that's great. Sometimes it's wonderful because I just make a decision. I just do it. And there's no, you know, there's no middle person to go through. But then other times it's not great because I don't have anybody to bounce off of. Right.
You're like the Sam Esmail of, sorry, I love Mr. Robot. And Sam Esmail did like the whole thing. And it's very rare for a TV show person to like direct the episodes, to write the episodes, right. Like all of them. He wrote like, I think all of them or mostly all of them.
That guy must have had so many mental health problems by the end. Right. Man, working in TV, I know what that's like. But yeah, no. Yeah, I feel like just being that close to it, there is something that gets lost sometimes, right? And I did actually, my friend Walt J., who's a fellow engineer in town, he mastered it. So I didn't master.
Oh, so you had someone else's ears to do that.
I decided at least to have that. So I had somebody's objective ear on it. But I mean, at the same time, I would have loved to have given him tracks to mix. If I would have had the budget, I would have totally just said, hey, here you go. Because I love the way he mixes. I love his sound. But yeah, so I did have his ear. At least I got to ask him some questions here and there. And he was awesome. Like he, you know, he openly shared his engineering advice with me. And I mean, as somebody who's been in this industry a long time, that's not the way things used to be. You know, you wouldn't just tell people your secrets all the time, right? Quote unquote secrets. But I feel like younger engineers are way better at collaborating and helping each other.
As opposed to like holding on, like the secret recipe that, you know, grandma keeps in a safe kind of thing.
Totally. I mean, I it's funny because where I am in my generation, in my age, is I'm kind of like right in the middle of that transition between kind of, I call them the old heads.
You're an elder millennial.
In some ways. Yeah. Right. And like I was around for the advent of technology for music, right? Like I was around for when the internet started. I've been there since dial-up, right? I've watched video games progress from Atari all the way to PS5, right? And gaming PCs. And so I have a bit of a different perspective because I can connect with both those sides, I feel like. But one thing I'm really excited about, like I say, with youth is that they're just so willing to share information. You just go,
it's like
YouTube.
A lack of possessiveness about it.
Totally. Yeah. And it's almost about like I have no reservations now about my own skill level. Like I feel like I'm good at what I do and I have a business. And as long as I stay good at what I do and as long as I keep, you know, working hard, I don't see a reason why I shouldn't be in demand. Whereas I think in the past people have thought like you would come steal those skills and then you would take their clients.
All the clients and no one else would go to you anymore.
And no one else would go to you. And maybe there's some truth to that. I don't know. Like I've never experienced that.
It's a kind of like scarcity mindset.
Yes. And but I feel like now that mindset can exist because the information is just readily available everywhere. So you have nothing to hold on to. So you have to make it about how you treat people and how you interact with others. Like I feel like my skill level is one thing, but my ability to collaborate is a totally different thing.
That's a super good point and a very optimistic perspective on the future and the direction that we as a society are going with. Because, I mean, you could come up with problems all day with like the way that we share content and stuff nowadays and like how everything's getting so bite-sized and et cetera. But it does have the virtue of if you're a jerk, like, then you're not going to have clients because you're not like the sole provider of like, you're not the like top chef in the kitchen with the secret recipe anymore. Yep. I must be hungry. I keep going to food.
Did a lot of cooking in the past. We didn't even get into
Yes. Yeah. Too many projects. But you're right. I think there's like a huge social benefit to that because then people who are like pretty nice people who do a good job will do better in the end.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel pretty like...
No, it is. It's like, you know, and I don't want to sit here and toot my own horn or anything like that, but I mean, I have a social work degree, right? And I have seen that benefit my career over and over again.
Oh, interesting.
Because I have the ability to communicate well. Like that's part of...
And empathize
and all those things, right? And those are important skills in this field. They are. And I mean, I had this one client recently who've been calling me a lot and, you know, been struggling with some things like about their art and like I was there to console them in some ways and talk them through it. And I feel like that's one skill that I have that maybe other engineers wouldn't have all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying nobody has that skill, but I can see that that combination of skills really gives me an advantage. And yeah, I mean, who wants to work with somebody that you don't enjoy being around?
Right, exactly.
Like, so,
well, and the ego thing too, because it's, I feel like being able to set aside your ego and it being about the person that you're working with, the person that you're recording, as opposed to like, look at me, I'm this like super awesome recording guy.
Yeah, right, right. And I think that's important big time. Like I don't want to become, I never want to become like a personality, right? Like I'm not really interested in, I don't know, like not to knock any of these big engineers out there, but there's like the Chris Lord-Alges and all these things, like, you know, they're big names in engineering and, you know, and they're big deals and there's plugins designed after, like I that's not my interest. Like I think I'm really much more interested in just, yeah, collaborating with artists and helping people tell their stories and making really interesting things. And if I can make a living doing it, like that's perfect. Like that's what I'm going for. So,
well, yeah. And that's what you're doing. Yeah. And that's a good way to wrap up. I mean, I feel like I mentioned this to you earlier, but Dave is, I think, my only musician friend who's like managed to like make a living from music. I can't think of anyone else who has. I mean, yeah. In a real like you own your own business, like you, like I do that too. So it's, yeah, it's kind of rare to meet others like with a music business in the,
yeah,
wild.
Yeah. Especially in Saskatchewan. It's, yes, like there's only a million people here. and
it's a big province and it's not, yeah, an art-centered province.
There's definitely others. You know, like I think of Todd Bryanton, and I don't know his story very well. I haven't talked to him in years, but I just know that he wrote like Beep Beep I'm a Sheep, which is a huge internet hit. He wrote I Like Trains, I believe. Like there's these huge internet, all the kids, my son, oh, yeah, knows a song. His friends all know Beep Beep I'm a Sheep. Like it's a huge meme.
That's really cool.
And he wrote it. He's from town. And so that guy, he's so elusive. Like I just don't see him anywhere. He's not on social media going crazy. Mm-hmm. He's just making a living, I think, doing this stuff. As far as I know, because I mean, when you have millions of views and subscribers on things, I think you can make money, but yeah.
Well, congrats on the expansion of your business. Thanks. And like hiring your first a contractor, essentially, like, or employee.
Well, actually, he's a business partner.
Oh, he's a business partner.
Yeah,
okay.
We're all in together. Yeah, we're married. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
we took our vows.
Well, good luck on your marriage.
It's a new marriage. It is.
Yeah. Yeah. And like all the work that you've picked up recently and stuff like that, I think it's awesome. What would you want to like share with people? Like where can people find you? That kind of stuff.
I think if you want to get a good picture of like all around, there's two places to go is RomanEmpireStudios.com. That's the main place. You can find everything there. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Facebook. I'm on all those places.
Yeah, you were just we were talking on the podcast. Like you just got started with TikTok.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to put a lot of content too. A lot of plans. So
you're putting me to shame a little bit.
Well,
there.
Well, actually,
I'm the old lady now.
Well, you know, it's I was kind of forced to. I feel like not forced to, but I feel like I'm at a point now where I'm realizing how important it will be for me going forward. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm going to be sharing a lot of information, just like we were talking about. I mean, there'll be tutorials. There'll be little tidbits of information. It's, you know, and I do that already on Instagram a little bit. Like I'll share like, oh, this plugin's really cool. Try this out. Mm-hmm. But I want to do more of that. So yeah, you can check me out, RomanEmpireStudios.com. And then Femme Fragile is the music project I'm involved in. And I didn't say this actually yet on the podcast, but we are switching the branding even more now to it being just about Shalynn.
Yes. Where, yeah, you're like in the, she's like the personality of,
yeah,
it. It's kind of like how I'm the criminal kid.
Yeah. She's Billie Eilish and I'm the, yeah, brother and I'm her brother.
The brother.
Yeah. Like that's yeah, kind of how I want to set it up. And for a lot of reasons, because I think it gets a little muddled when there's two of us in the limelight and I don't really care to be in the limelight. I think Shalynn is the personality. She's got spunkiness and she's, you know, she's interesting to talk to and we're going to brand it like that. It's going to be about her.
Well, the industry has also changed, like in fairness, right? Where it's all about, yeah, like individual personalities.
It is. And yeah, that's another reason why we're doing it. Because I'm like, nobody cares about a band. Like, do I want to be a band?
Not right now.
I don't know. Like, yep, like, I mean, I'm not saying nobody, but clearly in the top 10, it's, mm-hmm, even, maybe even top 50.
It's all collabs. It's like solo, yeah, artists and collaborations.
Right.
Which, by the way, we have to do at some point.
We will. We're, yeah, going to. So yeah, femfragile.ca is our website. Yeah. So if you want to go there, you can check that out too. We're also on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, everything. And YouTube, lots of music videos, Pretty and Dying, Counterfeit. Yeah.
Check them out. Very cool. Thank you for letting me infiltrate your basement and,
yeah, this was great,
making use of your equipment to have you on my show, even though this is really your, yeah, setup.
Yeah. Well, no, it's great. Again, like I say, the reason why I wanted to podcast was just to hang out with people like yourself because I don't do it enough. So
yeah, and it gets you in the room with creative people and it does, like, it's, yeah, a social excuse and everything like,
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
So check out the podcast that we recorded previously on Creative Coliseum, mm-hmm, by Roman Empire Studios.
I'm not sure whose is going to come out first.
Yeah. We'll have to like coordinate this, yeah, a little bit. Yeah. We'll probably do like, let's do like a simultaneous post.
Yeah, we'll do something like that. Yeah. We'll cross-pollinate.
Yeah, cross-pollinate.
That's what we're going to do. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. And the battery just died. So with that, I am going to say farewell. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye, everybody.